Welcome one and all to Web Sleuth Radio. Tonight, we welcome our good friend Levi Page of the Crime and Scandal Podcast. And we've all been riveted by the pictures of Hurricane Harvey. People in Texas, the rescues of the animals. I don't know anybody that can be pulled away from watching what's going on. Now, our first topic tonight involves the biggest story in the nation, which is Hurricane Harvey. But it also involves a mystery of a missing loved one. Her name is Crystal McDowell. Terrible tragedy and mystery here because Crystal McDowell, she went to get her kids early Friday morning and hasn't been seen since. But this is in Texas, but her car was found at a Motel 6, okay, and it was underwater. It was a Mercedes. And here's the weird thing. The Mercedes was parked, you know, back end first, which I thought was really odd. Everybody just goes front end to the parking space and jumps out. Her car was backed in, which there would be no reason for that, I think, unless you were trying to cover up something. Now, police do believe that foul play was involved in her disappearance. And the sheriff there, Sheriff Hawthorne, is very confident that Crystal is not a victim of the hurricane, because that's what everybody thought at first, was that that Crystal was going to be a victim of the hurricane, and didn't happen. The cops are absolutely convinced that Crystal is a victim. And her family, I was going to have one of her cousins on, and right before the show, the cousin contacted me and said, look, the sheriff says that it hurts the investigation. They don't want to do anything to damage the investigation, so she had to withdraw, and I totally understand that. So that's the mystery right there. Now, Crystal McDowell was last seen leaving her boyfriend's house. Her boyfriend has a security camera inside. To me, it almost looks like a nannygram. And what has been released are still pictures, not the continuous video, but still pictures of Crystal that morning in her boyfriend's apartment. Here is what Sheriff Hawthorne said when he was talking to MSNBC. He said that he was on the Ashley Banfield show, and he said, my concern is we need the whole video. We don't need the pictures that he's produced. We're talking about the boyfriend, Paul Hargrave. My concern is we need the whole video. We don't need the pictures that he's produced to you or now to us. We want the whole video. So in the morning, we will get them. Now, this interview was done Thursday night. And he goes on to say, you know, he doesn't seem to mind, and he's very forthcoming with us. So we just need to get the server from his video. In other words, the boyfriend, Paul, just gave still pictures to the sheriff and not the video. Does it mean anything? Could it mean anything? I don't know.
Yes, I had heard that. This is a man that's the jeweler, that's her boyfriend, that is in Baytown, Texas, and she also has an ex-husband that she has children with, that she was actually living with while her home was being renovated. And he will not give them video, even though he has video of her, which is extremely odd. And what's also extremely odd about this case is that she was going to go pick up her children, and they were going to go to Dallas to ride out this storm in Dallas because it was not going to be hit like the Houston area was. And her car, a black Mercedes-Benz, was found in Baytown, which is 30 minutes outside of Houston, the area that she lives in. It was found in the same area, and it was found at a Motel 6 off I-10, and it had been underwater for some time, and they had found people around the car that they had questioned. So it's obvious she never got to her ex-husband. She never got to Dallas. And the entire thing is extremely suspicious. And this is a 38-year-old, very beautiful woman. She is 5'4", weighs 120 pounds, a real estate agent, very successful in her field, and she's gone, And the trouble with this investigation is Harvey has wreaked havoc there on the coastal areas of South Texas and East Texas, and that has interfered with this investigation. And I'm just thinking about the evidence that may have disappeared or how they can use even cadaver dogs or scent dogs to try to track her down. Will that interfere with that and the collection of forensic evidence? The entire thing is extremely unfortunate that this happened right as Hurricane Harvey hit that area.
Well, and one has to wonder, Levi, with Crystal McDowell going missing, did somebody see an opportunity? Hey, this big hurricane's coming in. I can take this woman, be it a stranger abduction or somebody she knew, because all of the attention is going to be on Hurricane Harvey. It could be some sort of thinking like that. It was a perfect cover for what the person was planning, and that person was absolutely right. It is a perfect cover. But I do want to say one thing. On the Ashley Banfield show, the sheriff said that in the morning, this was Thursday night, in the morning, we will get with him, meaning they were going to get with Paul, the boyfriend. It was understood that he was going to turn over the rest of it. Now, the interesting thing is, we haven't had an update. Did he turn over everything? Did he not? I don't know. I would assume we'd have some sort of update, which just bothers me. But then, here's the deal, okay? Paul Hargrave and Crystal McDowell seem to have a wonderful relationship, very loving. It was a very stressful relationship between Crystal and her ex-husband, Stephen McDowell. According to the sheriff, he's basically saying, and I'm paraphrasing what he has said in recent interviews, basically the two men are kind of pointing the finger at each other. That's where the hostility is between those two men. We don't know if those two men are really, truly a suspect. But, Levi, we have to go with what we have learned from the past. Mm-hmm. Now, every case is not the same. We know that. But most cases, there is a logical line that ends with the conclusion. A perfect example of something that was not logical, the Elizabeth Smart kidnapping. Logically, that probably would have been a family member and she would have been killed, or an acquaintance, somebody she knew, or a boyfriend or whatever. What, that didn't happen, thank God. She was found walking down the street because she'd been living with her kidnappers. That rarely happens, but it did. All the rest of the time, look at all the other kids kidnapped or murdered and then taken away, saying they were kidnapped. There's just a logical line of thinking. Logical line of thinking here is, and I'm not accusing anybody, is the ex-husband did not have a great relationship with her. The boyfriend apparently had a great relationship, but why is he just turning over still photos? Do they have the whole video now? Is there a video in the parking lot? Is there security footage in the parking lot of her getting in her car? Where is that? What do you think?
I think that in this case, we have the ex-husband who she was temporarily living with while her townhouse was being renovated, and then we have the boyfriend who is a jeweler in the Baytown, Texas area. And I think when you look at this, you see two motives emerge. You can see her husband maybe thinking, you know, you're living with me. Why don't we get back together? Why don't you dump this guy that you're seeing? And apparently, his Facebook page, her husband's Facebook page, has a lot of photographs of her and him smiling and being happy together. So is he still in love with her? Does he not want to completely cut her out of his life romantically? And we can see a boyfriend getting angry at that relationship, getting angry at the fact that she is staying with him while her home is being renovated. So we have two motives emerging. And what is extremely disturbing, Tricia, is that her family members have said that they are receiving telephone calls of people trying to threaten them and extort them with extort money out of them because there is a $10,000 reward for anybody that has information relating to her whereabouts. So why would someone threaten this family, try to extort this family? Is it connected to any of the people in her life? If not, that could point to a stranger abduction, because why would someone take this time during Hurricane Harvey to threaten the family of this missing woman?
Where did you hear that? Was it
Melissa Cherry, who is the cousin of this missing 38-year-old mom, told the Baytown Sun that numerous people have called the family claiming to have kidnapped McDowell. Some have tried to extort
money. Oh, you know what? And let me go back to what the cousin of Crystal told me after she accepted my invitation to come on. Right before, she said the sheriff is asking us not to talk because he doesn't want to harm the investigation. I'm wondering if that was a piece of information that absolutely should not have been released. That's very interesting. I did not read that. See, Levi, you are just a wealth of information. You are the walking Wikipedia of true crime, I swear. Now, here's the thing. We all know Tim Miller. We love Tim Miller of Texas EquiSearch. Yes. I spoke to him earlier this evening, Levi, and he told me that he couldn't come on the show because of what the sheriff had asked him. Please do not go to the media. But he did say, and he gave me approval to say this, that Texas EquiSearch is hand-in-hand with law enforcement in the search for Crystal. So he's working very closely with law enforcement, and I'm very happy to hear that, because you all know Tim Miller. His daughter went missing, which is why he formed Texas EquiSearch. And he's not afraid to go down there and literally take his horses in a flooded stream to try and find somebody. So we may have an update from Tim Miller tomorrow or the next day, because apparently they are searching. Earlier I read that they weren't searching, but then Tim said they were. I assume it was tomorrow. Maybe it'll be Tuesday. But, you know, Tim, he's a great guy, and they've got him on their side, and law enforcement is working hand-in-hand with him, which is great, because sometimes law enforcement says, no, we don't need the help, right?
Absolutely, and I think they need all the help that they can get, because you can just imagine the resources that they're going to have to use in helping people that have been affected by the hurricane, and yet they have this high-profile missing woman that has vanished at the same time as this hurricane that has occurred. So you can imagine their manpower is not going to be as heavy or aggressive as it usually is in missing people cases. So I'm super glad that Tim Miller is on this, that EquiSearch is on this. And by the way, Tim Miller's home in Texas has been flooded, and this is actually the second time his home has been flooded. Right before this, it was flooded before, and it had just gotten everything taken care of, and then this flood happens from Harvey. So, you know, my prayers and thoughts are with him, and even though his home is flooded, he is still searching for this missing mother, and that shows you the dedication, the commitment that EquiSearch and Tim Miller has for families of the missing and to find these missing people. So hats off to him. That's really an honorable thing that he's doing.
Absolutely. And both homes flooded. Boy, I'd be pretty bitter about that, but he is not. He, like you said, he just gets up and goes. He does not let go of a case. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to hear from Tim Miller, the Sheriff's Department, somebody in the next day or two to give us an update. Because early on, the sheriff came out and said, law enforcement came out and said that the Crystal McDowell disappearance she didn't disappear because of Harvey. Foul play is suspected. And so I would think that they would have some sort of solid evidence right at hand, right there, that points to a human being taking her and whatever. Don't you think? I mean, why would they say that unless they had something really solid? Because it's obvious, the first thought is Hurricane Harvey got her.
Absolutely, and we know that she's very active on social media, and she's gone silent on social media, and she claimed, according to her boyfriend, that she was going to ride out the storm in Dallas. However, she never posted that on social media. All she did was wish people luck in braving the storm, told people to be careful. And we know that her computer has been seized, and I'm hoping that her cell phone carrier cooperates with law enforcement and they'll be able to see if she has texted anyone about what her plans are. Because according to her family, her uncle that raised her like he was her father, because her parents passed away when she was 11, and her cousin that has spoken out in the news, they said that they have stated that she never told them that she was planning to go to Dallas to ride out the storm.
Really?
Yeah, well, she never told them of her plans.
Huh. So we know she didn't get to her ex-husband's house because she didn't pick up the kids. Her car, her Mercedes, was found at that Motel 6, submerged in water. What do you think of, and this is just a little teeny something that is bothering me, it was brought up to me by a friend who's a brilliant person, and I agree with her. You look at all the cars that are parked normally, nose first. This Mercedes that belonged to Crystal is backed into the parking space. Why would somebody do that? Because I think when you pop open her hood, pop open her trunk, it's not like it faces the stairs or it doesn't face anywhere. So there'd be no need to back in unless maybe you were trying to hide something. Am I up in the night, Levi, here?
You know, that's a good observation. And it's also interesting in that there were two people that were lingering or they were found inside of the vehicle. I'm not positive on that, but they've been questioned by police and apparently cleared. It was in two people that were in the parking lot of this Motel 6. But the fact that her car was there, abandoned, and there's no sign of her is extremely odd, especially since she was planning to go to Dallas. What would prevent her to make it to Dallas? Because the storm had not hit when she was allegedly hightailing it out of the Houston area. So it's just very odd that her vehicle was found there in Baytown at that Motel 6.
Exactly. And to get back to the parking question, let's face it. We got to be honest here. Guys do that. They'll take a car, pull it in backwards. It's rare, and, you know, call me sexist, but I've just, you know, that's how my husband parked. That's how a lot of guys park. It's just odd, and I don't know if it means anything. It could mean everything. We just don't know. So from here, now that the family has been told not to talk, one of the interesting things we learned, as Levi pointed out, was according to a family member, Crystal's family was getting phone calls of extortion. Was that right, Levi? They were saying
yes,
give us
threat,
right,
and saying that they had her.
Mm-hmm. And see, that again, this is what the horror is of having a family or member or loved one go missing, is you get the crackpots in the world calling, and then you get the people that are really truly involved in it, and they'll call too just as much. Maybe this is just a flat down kidnapping for money, and neither ex-husband or boyfriend has anything to do with it. This could be a big twist, big surprise here coming up. That's very, very possible. She was in the real estate business. Who knows? I mean, who knows what goes on behind closed doors? There could be money issues that we don't know about. I don't think there's anything nefarious that Crystal McDowell was involved in. I don't think she was involved in anything illegal. But we don't know what is going on in her private life. Maybe there was somebody out there that was harassing her for money and didn't get it. But the thing is, you can go wild with theories. So it's best to kind of dial them back and just let law enforcement do their thing. Do you have any thoughts, Levi, on what law enforcement could be doing next? I don't know where they could search. I don't even know what they could do other than interview people.
Well, yesterday morning that there was a search conducted by law enforcement in Baytown, Texas, not Dallas, but Baytown, and they were actually searching a marshy area. It's described as a marshy area, a body of water, and apparently a cell phone ping from this missing woman's cell phone was picked up at a tower in this vicinity. So we do know that there have been searches. We do know that there have been cell phone pings in this investigation.
Well, we can only hope that one of those cell phone pings leads to a happy ending, and please, God, let this be one of those times where the unusual happens. Let her still be alive and the bad guys caught, just like in the Elizabeth Smart case. And again, if they are calling in with these extortion threats, that's definitely what the police are working on if it is absolutely true. Okay, so Levi, tell me what's going on. What cases are you focusing on your podcast, on your Crime and Scandal podcast? What's going on?
So as you know, Scott Peterson has spoke out from death row there in San Quentin. He was convicted of killing his wife, Lacey Peterson, and his son, Connor. And I'm going to do a two-part series on the Scott Peterson case with Richard Herman. He's a defense lawyer, and Beth Karras, she is a former prosecutor and a reporter who actually covered Scott Peterson's trial from start to finish in Redwood City, California. And I'm going to do a two-part series on Crime and Scandal, my podcast, talking about the latest developments in the Scott Peterson case, because he is appealing his conviction. And in this appeal, he is claiming that one of the jurors, who was known as Strawberry Shortcake, she went by that nickname. That's how everyone remembers her from that trial. Her real name is Rochelle Nice. She failed to disclose during voir dire jury selection that she had been the victim of an assault when she was pregnant, and she had actually filed a protection order against the person that assaulted her. And in this case, they were asked if they had ever sued anyone, and she failed to disclose that. Now, she claims that she didn't know that filing for a restraining order, a protection order, classified as a lawsuit, but it is technically a lawsuit. She failed to disclose that, and the defense is saying because she was a victim of a crime while she was pregnant, that that means that Scott Peterson should be granted a new trial, that she was a juror that was out to get Scott Peterson. We also know that she had corresponded with Scott Peterson. After she convicted him and sent him to death row, she recommended for the judge to sentence him to death, and the judge did sentence him to death. She did correspond with him, and now the defense is using that as a basis to argue for a new trial. The defense also says that there are witnesses that witnessed and alleged there was a robbery.
Well,
and
we don't know that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they said that there are witnesses that claim that that Lacey was alive after Scott went fishing. Beth Karras really cast some major doubt on whether those witnesses' stories are valid. And remember, eyewitness testimony has been largely discredited.
All right, and let's dial it back here. First of all, I was really disappointed in A&E that they let the guy's a whack job, in my opinion, for claiming that Scott Peterson is innocent. And I apologize, I don't remember his name, I wish I could, but he was talking about, there was a robbery. We all know that. Okay? It had nothing to do with Lacey Peterson disappearing. That's
old news.
This guy's just trying to put a new spin on it so he can get a little FaceTime on TV and be part of this appeal. And shame on A&E for letting that guy talk, because all of that has been disproven. It's just like the JonBenet Ramsey case where they kept bringing up, the stranger coming in. Mm-hmm. Baloney. Go ahead, Levi.
It was a neighbor that had their home had been robbed. They were away on a day trip to L.A., and their home was robbed. And apparently they had a, what do you call those things, where a lock, a safe that had been locked, that had been taken from their home, and they're trying to connect Lacey's disappearance to this robbery. However, Lacey Peterson and those witnesses that claim that they saw these strange people in the neighborhood and they saw Lacey walking after Scott Peterson had left to go fishing, none of them had mentioned a safe. And you would think if people were loading out a safe from the neighbor's home and these people witnessed it, they would have mentioned a safe to the police.
Exactly.
And they did. They never mentioned a safe, rather. They never mentioned seeing anybody loading up a safe. And also, those robbers were interviewed about Lacey's disappearance, and why would they want to take Lacey, abduct her,
it doesn't make any
kill
sense.
Her, and then throw her in the same body of water where Scott was fishing? That doesn't make any sense.
None of it makes any sense. It's absolutely ridiculous. And again, shame on A&E for allowing this type of information that just hurts Sharon, her mom, Sharon Rocha, so much and so deeply. It's got to. And her whole family, her brother, her sister, everybody, to bring this up when it's already been investigated, dealt with. All of that, I don't care if you saw Bozo the Clown and the Lone Ranger having an affair in the middle of the street. I don't care what you saw. It has nothing to do with Lacey Peterson going missing. Nothing. You don't take away all of the evidence from Scott that points directly to him just because some yahoo robbed a neighbor at around the day. It's ridiculous. It's a miscarriage of justice, if you will, if they even give any sort of consideration to that. Now, let's talk about Strawberry Shortcake, the juror. We all remember Strawberry Shortcake. She is very memorable, to say the least. And it didn't surprise me when I heard that she wrote Scott Peterson. She just seemed like the type that would get all involved in everything. I don't know, but Levi, I need you to put on your lawyer hat because I did go to law school, but I just don't like to brag about it. And what do you think? Do you think that this appeal saying that Strawberry Shortcake failed to provide the information that she had a restraining order against somebody because she was attacked when she was pregnant, do you think that's enough to get a free trial, get another trial for Scott Peterson?
Well, I don't know. But I did interview Richard Herman. He's a defense attorney, and he says that he was not impressed with a lot of the claims that were made in the A&E special that is currently airing. He says that he is more focused on that juror, and he's also focused on some of the things that happened during the trial. He claims that the jury, when they found Scott Peterson guilty, that there were people out in the courthouse area that were cheering and were all happy and elated that Scott Peterson had been convicted. And he thinks that that tainted the jury reaching a fair verdict to whether or not Scott Peterson should have got the death penalty.
Oh, no. See, that's, he said that's that they a whole different not, thing.
He said they should not have been exposed to people at the courthouse screaming and cheering the guilty verdict. Secondly, Richard Herman says that jurors were able to get inside the boat.
The boat, I remember
Scott
that. Tested the boat. They did it very quickly, and then somebody made him get out. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that's correct. And he says that he thinks that that should not have happened, and he thinks that that could be a reason that Scott Peterson gets a new trial, not based on the robbery that occurred. And I just want to mention about the robbery. I just remembered that they actually arrested two people. It was two guys that had committed the robbery, and they located the contents of what they stole. It was a gun and a safe. And if they were able to arrest these two guys, locate what they took, what they stole, then you would think they would have found evidence connecting them to Lacey's murder if that were the case. And it's completely unreasonable to think that these two people abducted a pregnant woman because she might have witnessed them robbing a place. You would maybe see them pulling out a gun and shooting her because she witnessed a robbery, but not abducting her and then killing her and then putting her body in the same body of water, the bay, where Scott Peterson was fishing, Barkley Marina. That doesn't make sense. That's not logical.
It makes absolutely no sense. And again, no matter what happened outside in the neighborhood or anywhere, it takes nothing away from the evidence that points to Scott Peterson. And we have gone over that time and time again. And just the fact that where he went fishing is where her body turned up, you know, right there. That's just like a slam dunk. I'm sorry. That's just ridiculous. You know,
I said earlier that eyewitness testimony has been discredited. It's not been discredited.
Right.
I misspoke. Eyewitness testimony has been generally deemed by the courts not to be as reliable as circumstantial evidence. Because, you know, let's think about it. You know, you're in a neighborhood and you can easily get your days mixed up. If you think you see Lacey out there, but was it the day that you really thought you saw her, or was it the day before? So people can get easily confused, especially if Lacey was known to be a regular in the neighborhood walking her dog. They could have said, oh, yeah, I saw her at this time, but they really didn't. They got it confused with another time that they saw her out there walking her dog. So circumstantial evidence has actually been deemed more reliable than eyewitness evidence, generally speaking. And that was what Scott Peterson was convicted on. Circumstantial evidence, the fact that the bodies were discovered in the same vicinity where he was fishing, which happened to be 90 miles away from where he lived in Modesto. So also to further discredit the theory that a robbery or robbers connected to this neighborhood killed Lacey, you would have to imagine them traveling 90 miles to dispose of her body when Modesto is a very rural area. It's a farming and agriculture town. There are plenty of places to dispose of a body there. So that points away from burglars, robbers killing Lacey and to Scott, since he was there at the Barkley Marina. So this is a very damning case against Scott Peterson, and I remember following this, and there was just so many little things that pointed to Scott Peterson. Remember when they were searching that bay, the body of water near where Scott was fishing, they were searching and they found an anchor. And Sharon Rocha, Lacey's mother, had called Scott, and she says, they didn't find Lacey, they found an anchor, and Scott whistled. I can't whistle or I would mimic what he did.
Yeah,
but he whistled.
Yeah,
yes.
Wow, close call.
Yeah.
Because they thought it might be Lacey. They thought
I'm
it might be Lacey, but it turned out to be, but it turned out to be an anchor, and he just whistled like anybody would if they had been able to get away with something.
And they got that on tape because they had him wiretapped. And it's just little stuff like that that convicted Scott Peterson. And us talking about it may not seem very compelling for those that are not familiar with it. You have to listen for yourself. I think it's on YouTube. And you'll know the minute you hear it, you're like, wow. this guy whistled a sigh of relief because he was free.
And he had been caught.
Also, do you remember the telephone call that he made to Lacey that there – answering machine picked up when he was on his way home from fishing, and I'm putting fishing in quotation marks. He made a telephone call, and it was all lovey-dovey, so put on. He was really throwing it on thick. Sweetheart, I love you. I'm on my way home. And it was just so weird. You know, normally when people are calling someone, letting them know that they're on their way home, they just quickly tell you what's going on and then a quick love you.
Right.
And this guy was really throwing it on thick. It sounded staged and insincere. That was another piece of evidence that made Scott Peterson look bad. The fact that he was having an affair with Amber Fry, while that alone doesn't indicate guilt. But before Lacey went missing, he was on the phone with her, and he says, "This is my first Christmas without my wife. She's dead." And then she turns up missing. I mean, what a coincidence.
Exactly. And Levi, I mean, we really could go on and on. It just continues. Him calling Amber during a memorial service in a park for, not a memorial, but a, you know, a service, a prayer service where they're praying for her safe return in a park, and he calls Amber and pretends he's in Paris on New Year's Eve. You could just, like I said, go on and on. It's a fascinating look into the mind of somebody that twisted. I read the book by, now I'm going to totally forget his name. He's a psychiatrist. He's on Fox News all the time. He wrote the book.
Abloh.
Normally, some of the weird stuff he says about things is I totally disagree with. But this book he wrote about Scott Peterson and Scott's family was really an interesting look into the psychology of it all. You know, Scott's mother never put him down. She carried him everywhere, and he was the golden child. He could do no wrong, and he was going to be incredibly successful and all of these things. Scott Peterson was never allowed to have his own opinion, to put forth what he wants to do. Dad golfed, so by gosh, little Scott golfed, you know, and wanted to be a golfer.
Do you remember when the day after they found the remains that were female in the bay, they washed up, and then the next day Connor's body washed up, and people had actually mistaken that little baby's body as a baby doll, like a doll.
Right.
And he went fishing. Do you remember that? Not fishing. He went golfing.
With
his family.
I do remember that.
And it was at a place near the Mexican border. And to me, a lot of people say that he was fleeing to Mexico. And Scott says that he was golfing. I think he was going to do both. I think he planned to golf and then flee to Mexico when he got done golfing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was golfing with his family. And that really struck a nerve with me, because I can imagine if someone in my family, if their body washed ashore, I would not be golfing the next day.
But you would be just devastated.
Yes.
And there's one other interesting little thing. Oh, go ahead.
And he dyed his hair.
he dyed his hair orange.
Yes, and he had
said he got it swimming.
Brother's
ID
and all sorts of stuff with him.
Yep, he was ready to flee. And one other thing, and this is something that Dr. Keith Abloh pointed out in his book, which I found fascinating. When Scott got to the jail, he was allowed, I think he made two phone calls, one to his lawyer, and the other was to his friend, not to say, "I've been arrested," but to say, "I won't be able to bake those lavender cookies for you. I'm sorry." Now, as Dr. Abloh pointed out, that would be the last person you would think to call would be a friend to say you can't make cookies because you've just been arrested for the murder of your wife. But in Scott's mind, because he has no feeling, he has no way to really understand how people with feelings feel, to him it's equal. He has to call his lawyer because he's been arrested, and he wants to make sure that his friends aren't waiting for the cookies and he's going to disappoint him. In his mind, because he has no emotion, because he has no ability with empathy, in his mind, they're both equal phone calls. They accomplished what he needed to accomplish. And that's what Scott was all about, was trying to imitate a real person that had real feelings. That's why whenever he told, like, a story, it was exaggerated, because he didn't know what else to do. He thought he had to exaggerate, because he couldn't pinpoint how real people talk about stories. You know, everything was a big exaggeration to Amber. You could just, like I said, again, I keep saying it, but it's true. We could go on and on and on. But when is that Crime and Scandal podcast going to be on? Do you know, Levi?
It will be on September 11th. Part one, my interview with Richard Herman, will air. And then September 18th, part two with Beth Karras will air. And you can find that by going to iTunes or your Apple podcast app if you have an Apple device and searching Crime and Scandal. And it should come up. Click subscribe, and you'll get the podcast directly to your phone or your Apple device. If you don't have an Apple device, you can follow my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/crimescandalpod, and I'll post the link to where you can listen on your browser. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this appeal, Tricia. And it's going to the Ninth Circuit, which is known as being very, very,
very
liberal.
And normally I love that, but not in this case. Yes, very anti-death penalty, actually.
Yes,
and
they've overturned a lot of death penalty cases.
Yes. Can you imagine? I mean, I don't even want to think it, because, oh, my God, if Scott Peterson had to be retried, I would hope that they would, I don't know, I don't even know what you would do. Make him a deal, life without parole, whatever. But who knows? There is a chance.
If Scott Peterson is retried, I don't think he'll accept a deal.
He may not. Oh, my God.
I think he would really want to roll the dice.
Well, he would. His ego would not let him accept a deal, because then he'd have to admit that he did kill her. He would never, never accept a deal. God, that just makes my...
And Trisha, you were talking earlier about how tone-deaf he is. He doesn't realize that what he does is abnormal, and he exaggerates things. And do you remember whenever Amber Fry had her press conference, when she went to the public and said, yes, I had a romantic relationship with Scott Peterson, I had no mm-hmm. idea he was married. He called her that the night that she had that press conference, and he said that he watched her and was proud of her, and that when she started crying during the press conference, he had to pull over his vehicle he was driving and vomit. And I was just thinking, you are going to vomit because your mistress was crying.
Yes.
But you never shed any tears in public over your wife who's 8 months pregnant that's missing. And instead
exactly.
of grieving when her body washes ashore, you're dyeing your hair, you have Viagra in your vehicle, and you're
mm-hmm.
heading to Mexico after a game of golf. So nothing about this guy makes any sense.
It doesn't, because you need to take the empathy part of his brain out, and his ability to understand reactions and how he has no idea how to socialize. Nothing. He is saying what he thinks a real person would do, with having absolutely no idea. That's why it comes off looking so fake. You know, who would call their mistress and say they were proud of her for basically putting the death penalty on you? I wouldn't call and congratulate somebody that was, well, of course, I would never do anything like that, but it's just, again, it's just a weird, weird thing to do, because he has no idea how a real human with real feelings would react. Well, Levi, I'm really anxious to hear this two-part podcast of Crime and Scandal, especially with Beth Karras, because I know Beth, and she is going to just rip this apart. But
she has, done a lot of research on this case, and she was there during mm-hmm. the trial from start to finish.
Exactly. That's where I really got to know just how great a reporter she is. But I'm worried about the Strawberry Shortcake Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals situation. It really bothers me. And also getting in the boat, that really bothers me. But the Strawberry Shortcake one,
she failed to disclose the restraining order or protection order because she didn't realize that those were considered lawsuits. And potential
mm-hmm.
jurors had to disclose any lawsuits that they have filed. And technically, it is a lawsuit that she filed. She was a petitioner, and it goes to, I think, family court when you seeking a restraining order and a protection order. So it technically is a lawsuit. You're not suing for monetary damage, but you are a petitioner in a case, and you are seeking protection and relief from the court. So it is technically a lawsuit. She didn't disclose that. Now, I don't know if that was enough to say that her testimony was clouded and that she was out to get Scott from the get-go. I don't know if that's enough, just that one piece of evidence right there that she failed to disclose that. But
I
Richard Herman, not. The defense lawyer that I interview, says that the investigators had used some scent tracking dogs in the case, and apparently one of the dogs had made mistakes in the past and had been made unreliable findings, and that evidence was admitted into trial, and he claims that it should not have been admitted into trial. So that's another thing that we have to factor in. But, you know, I think that if you I think the test that they use is if you exclude that evidence, would a jury reasonably find him guilty even if that evidence was excluded? And I don't think that that made such an impact on the jury, that the scent tracking dog evidence. I think that it was a piece of the puzzle, but I don't think it was the one thing that the jurors hung their hat on to say, this is why we think he's guilty. So I don't know if the appeal is going to be successful. What makes me nervous is that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal is very friendly to death penalty defendants that are seeking relief. They're known as being very liberal. We've all heard President Trump claim that he wants to disband the court. I don't know how he's going to do that, but he says that he wants to. But this is a court that's known as being very liberal, not in the political sense, but in the sense that they're friendly to defense attorneys and defendants and whether or not they received a fair trial.
It'll be interesting to see. Levi Page, thank you very much. Cheryl McCollum tried to call in. There is something wrong with the Blog Talk software, so I'll be talking with them.
Trisha,
because it kept
dropping her. I apologize for all those technical issues, but if you give me the audio, I will edit that out.
Thank you, and it certainly is not your fault, Levi. Don't even think that for a second. But Cheryl will come on again sometime very, very soon. And again, the reason why we did not have Crystal McDowell's cousin on is because the sheriff has asked the whole family to stop making statements and comments to the media, and we certainly understand and respect that. Okay, Levi Page, thank you, my dear. We will certainly send out the link to your Crime and Scandal podcast when they become available. You take care, all right?
Thanks, Trisha. Enjoy talking to you.
Thanks. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now. Okay, that is it, everybody. We are done. So another show full of technical mistakes that always make you laugh directly at me, not with me. And that's okay. I get it. But Levi Page is going to cut them all out so nobody will ever know. Next week, we'll be back same place, same time. Be sure and join us on Web Sleuths Radio. Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at Web Sleuths. Also, Facebook, facebook.com/websleuths, and the big one, the big mama, websleuths.com, the very best and most delicious true crime discussion forum in the world. See you next week, everybody, 8 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. Take care. Bye-bye.